It has been a momentous week for the U.S. legal system. Today, for the first time in American history, the president will nominate a black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court. That honor will go to Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. Yesterday in Minnesota, a jury found three former police officers guilty of failing to intervene in the murder of George Floyd. And on Tuesday, a jury in Georgia found the three white men who murdered black jogger Ahmaud Arbery guilty of a federal hate crime. Here's what Arbery's mother, Wanda Cooper Jones, said about the verdict.
They gave us a sense of a small victory. But we as a family would never get victory because Ahmaud is gone forever. Come on. Get up.
Earlier this week, I asked Columbia journalism professor Jelani Cobb about the significance of that case and other ongoing efforts to address racism in the U.S. justice system.
Well, I mean, I thought it was really interesting, because there had been, at the outset of this case, if you recall, the local prosecutor immediately saying that there was not even a basis for charges, much less what we've seen now, which are multiple convictions, and now followed by a hate crime conviction, which has confirmed that in the eyes of 12 jurors, these men were actually motivated by racial hatred and contempt. And so it's really a kind of 180 from where we started, and it's unlikely that we would have gotten here were it not for the moment that this occurred in, the extraordinary public pressure that was brought to bear for there even to be an investigation of what happened here, and then ultimately everything that has gone on and the intervening steps that led to what happened this week.
When the verdict was read in the first trial, you wrote in the New Yorker that the outcome wouldn't necessarily be taken as evidence that anything fundamental has changed about our skewed judicial system. I wonder if you feel any different now.
Yeah, I don't. I don't feel any different because, if we want to say that we have a judicial system that's capable of handling these problems, we should not have to rely upon the extraordinary efforts of mass protests, activists, public political pressure being brought to bear by elected officials, and everything that all that went into making sure that these men would even face trial at all. And so I don't think that even while this is somewhat of a victory, I think that Ahmaud Arbery's mother was correct in saying that it has to be weighed against the fact that her son will never be here again. But even if this is something of a legal victory, you have to hedge about the fact that it took so much effort to even get to that place.
Well, and it's only one case. An officer has just gone to trial in the shooting of Breonna Taylor in Louisville. Mm-hmm. There's an ongoing fight about teaching racism in schools, a debate about whether a black woman should be appointed to the Supreme Court. The list, it goes on and on and on. Where do you think the fight for racial justice is right now in this country?
I think it's a difficult moment to assess because in the immediate aftermath of Ahmaud Arbery's death, of Breonna Taylor's death, and particularly George Floyd's death, it seemed what people were calling a reckoning. It seemed that we were prepared to have a public discussion about the way that various institutions in this country deliver outcomes that are racially skewed. But what's happened since then is that there has been a counteroffensive that has taken us back to potentially where we were before any of those things even happened. That as a result of this, we're now looking at multiple states making it difficult for people to teach about controversial racial subject matter, which is only controversial in the eyes of some people.
Critical race theory, right?
Yeah, and what they're calling critical race theory, which doesn't actually conform to what critical race theory, the body of legal scholarship, actually is. But it seems that sometimes we're making progress, and it seems that at other points that we have taken two steps backward for every one step forward. And so it's just a very difficult, inscrutable moment to assess.
So in that case, what does the bar look like in which you would feel that we've cleared a hurdle where justice is applied evenly? What does that even look like at this point?
I think it's a really difficult thing to say. And the reason I say that is that one of the things that I've come to learn over the years that I've been writing about this subject matter and looking into the subject matter and reporting and doing documentaries and so on is that I don't think that our justice system exists in a vacuum. So I don't think we'll reach a moment where we have a completely just and equitable system of criminal justice at the same time that we have the socioeconomic inequalities that we have, that we have disparities in education, that we have disparities in healthcare, that we have disparities in infant mortality and lifetime earnings and all these things that correlate to race. And so our justice system is really a symptom of a much bigger set of inequalities that generate, you know, these problems. But the shortest version of that would be that we don't have, when we look annually at what our prosecutions and our convictions and the charges that are brought and our arrests, that they in no way, shape, or form correlate to the racial background or identity of the people who are in that system itself. And we're a long way off from that.
You know, all of this is happening at a moment or a month, even when we're acknowledging the contributions of Black people in this country. And I've heard people say that it's silly to focus on the history of Black Americans for only a month, or why should we focus on Black history at all? It should just be history. In the context of the conversation that we're having, do you think that one of the tonics to these great problems you're describing could be Black history? Could that help bridge the racial divides in America? Or does it just make it worse?
I mean, I think that, you know, in 1926, when, you know, nearly a century ago, when the historian Carter G. Woodson, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, founded what was then called Negro History Week, he did so with an explicitly political intent. You know, he hoped that this work and promulgating this information would make it more possible for us to achieve an actual democracy in the United States. He saw the distortions and lies that were told about the history of people of African descent as essentially undergirding the system of the two-tiered system of citizenship we had in this country at that time. And we still have very prominent remnants of that system that manifest themselves in these different ways. And so I think that we should take Dr. Woodson's wisdom at its face value, that this work that we do is not simply a matter of self-esteem boosting for people of African descent, but it's a point at which we can look at what the historic pitfalls and shortcomings of American democracy have been and find ways to shore them up in ways that benefit not only people of African descent, but all Americans. And maybe that's a utopian or idealist vision that Dr. Woodson articulated. But this was a person whose parents had been slaves. And I think that he perhaps had an insight into this that we would benefit from paying attention to even in our current time.
Are you optimistic that there is a way forward through all this?
I'm guardedly optimistic. You know, I think that, you know, the history lends itself to a kind of guarded optimism. And what I mean by that is we see that there's the possibility for terrible things to happen, but also the possibility of great, momentous, progressive change and empowering change to happen within the society. And really, the most succinct case I think we can make for optimism in this country is that our history tells us we have a fighting chance of actually making a better society.
Jelani Cobb is a professor of journalism at Columbia University and a staff writer at The New Yorker. Jelani, thank you.
Thank you.